It's time now for America in the Balance. Brought to you by Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise. And now your co-hosts, Amanda Teagarden and Don Wyatt.
And welcome, freedom-loving Oklahomans, to another hour of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with nobody today except the producer. Don is on assignment, which really means that he's out of town with his family, but he's on assignment. And filling in for Don Wyatt this week is my good friend and fellow researcher in Oklahoma, Kay Beach of Axiom for Liberty. Are you there, Kay?
I am, and thank you for having me.
Well, it's my I'm very grateful for the opportunity to co-host a show with you because we talk a lot and share a lot of information, and it's really been a comfort, probably like you, to have somebody that you can call and say, did you just see this? And they understand what you're talking about.
Absolutely, and always a pleasure to talk to you, and we share information all the time. And I don't know about you, but I learn as much from you and the information that you already have as anywhere else, and it is absolutely an honor to be here co-hosting with you. I guess I'm anchoring you, which means that I grab a hold firmly to your ankles and keep you from floating away, and I'm definitely up for that.
Well, that'll be a really neat trick since you're not in the same city that I am right now, and our producer is just laughing. And well, anyway, thank you for saying that. And what we're going to have today is a little bit of a different program. We're going to have a mix it up, kind of a round robin, and touch on a lot of different subjects. Our special guest today is a fellow researcher and somebody that I admire, and I know Kay does too, tremendously, is Vicki Davis, who is a researcher in Idaho. And she's a former computer systems analyst who has dedicated the last roughly 10 years of her life to actually researching what has happened in our country and the systems that have been put into place instead of real government. It's technology and systems that are into play. And she has a unique perspective because she understands the technology and the systems, having been in the field herself. We're going to be talking about things. I know Kay is going to talk about smart meters for a little bit, about what's happening in Oklahoma and some pushback, hopefully some pushback on that. We'll be talking about an FBI is to launch a nationwide facial recognition service. Now, isn't that an interesting word, Kay? It's a service to the public to recognize you using facial recognition technology. It's not an invasion. It's a service. So,
well, we're all customers, but I tell you what, that just makes me feel incredibly safer. How about you?
I am. It's another chipping away of any type of, as you said in the past, anonymity. And we will also be talking about a recent event in Oklahoma City, which was the Oklahoma Economic Development Council Summit. They had a 2011 summit. I attended it for 2 days. And they have very fortunately put all those presentations on the OEDC website, which is oedc.net. And the title of their summit this year was The New Oklahoma Economy. And the subtitle is Global, Social, Sustainable, Strategic. Now, when you hear those words, Kay, what do you think? Is it good news or is it bad news?
It sounds like terrible bad news to me. Global, sustainable, and strategic. And you went to this function. I believe it's kind of expensive to go. And I ask you to explain to me what they meant by global, sustainable, and strategic. And I think was it 2 days long that you sat there and absorbed what all of that meant?
It was 2 long days. In there with a bunch of talking heads, which doesn't sound very respectful, but it was a lot of people that are really thrilled with themselves. And what they're doing is planning the economy, the new Oklahoma economy. Talking points and agendas have already been decided, and those will be presented to the governor, who is at this as we speak. By the way, we're broadcasting from Oklahoma. As we speak, the governor, who is Governor Mary Fallon, is devising or coming up with the agenda, the legislative agenda for 2012. And so it was significant or important to go so that we could have an understanding, the grassroots groups could have an understanding of what we're going to be looking at in 2012. Global means more partnerships and more foreign direct investment. Social means that businesses and the government are going to be using social media in an increased manner for data aggregation and to market their products. Sustainable means that it's going to go to a technology-based economy, and strategic means strategic alliances, which is using public-private partnerships. Strategic alliance is the new term for that. So
can I jump in here and tell you what impression was?
Yes, Vicki Davis is our guest, and enough with the intro. And Vicki, what is your impression of the new Oklahoma economy in those presentations?
It made me think that what I need to do is to put up a website called Fascists of America and put pictures and bios of everybody that we identify to be a fascist who is engaged in transforming the American economy to the communist Chinese model of government in business in partnership with the chosen and selected few.
That's a pretty good summation, and we'll get to the fascism part. Vicki, Kay, you want to talk about what's happening? Is it in Norman is resisting the smart meters, or where is this effort?
Well, interestingly enough, you know, at the event you were at, the about the new Oklahoma Global Social Sustainable and Strategic Economy, I believe you talked to maybe a representative or someone associated with OG&E that summed up the problem for you, and I thought maybe that might be a good lead-in to talk about the opposition that's arising around smart meters in Oklahoma.
There was a woman at the conference, is Oklahoma Economic Development Council Summit. And these kinds of summits are taking place in your state. It's not just unique. It's not unique to Oklahoma. They had booths there from different organizations and businesses in the state, one of which was OG&E, which is Oklahoma Gas and Electric. OG&E has been the recipient of multi-millions of dollars in grants to establish or install 193,000, something like that, smart meters in the state of Oklahoma. Some cities have already adopted them, and others are resisting or are still in the process. So I stopped by the table because we've talked about smart meters before and had a conversation with the two representatives. And one woman I was talking, I said, well, and I was picking up the literature, and I said, well, you know, there's some growing concerns and some pushback against these smart meters with this, the understanding they're intrusive. And she says, well, that's a small faction that is resisting the smart meters. Really, once people have a concern, once we educate them, all it is a matter of educating them, and then they can see the value in it to them, then they understand why we're doing it and they begin to like it. And I said, well, what about the health issues? And again, she said, well, there's some issues to do that with that, but again, if it just is a matter of education. So it's not that there are really any. All it is just saying that we are not going to acknowledge any intrusive components of this, and we're not going to acknowledge the health aspects of it. We're just going to do it, and we're going to educate you in the process so you accept it.
And what
Idaho,
she means is
Idaho
is,
Power has tried to educate me about 5 times, and I keep saying thank you. No,
you're a slow learner, Vicki.
I know.
Have they not changed their mind at all, Vicki?
No, not yet. But neither have I.
That's well, good. All right,
facts are stubborn things, and that's one thing people need to do if they're wanting to know about the smart meters. They need to gather the facts, and there are plenty of them out there. I opened a Facebook group just to kind of see what concerns people had, positive, negative, whatever. Oklahoma Smart Meter Info Swap on Facebook. If you go to Facebook and you type in at the search box, Oklahoma Smart Meter Info Swap, you'll find that group, and you're welcome to join it. We're just sharing information there. Now, as I expected, I found a lot more people concerned about it than in favor of it, and I've learned a lot from sharing information at that Facebook group. One thing, and, you know, I'd have to say that this is not verified. I haven't looked into this person and, you know, verified that they worked with OG&E. So it's hearsay, I guess. But a lot of interesting conversations have cropped up. And one that I find real interesting, I've been talking to a fella that worked for Corex who installs the meters. And he indicated to me when we first started speaking that he used to work there and left on an unhappy circumstances, but only recently revealed to me a little bit more. And what he told me was, there were a couple of hurdles that he had to overcome in order to feel comfortable with installing these meters. And the first one, he says, was that the idea that there is a certain subset, there's a certain percentage of the population that is, in fact, sensitive to EMFs and that will, in fact, be caused health problems and distress and, you know, problems with their health due to the installation of these smart meters, that is something that OG&E is aware of. And he said, you know, he had to swallow that.
The EMFs and, being electromagnetic fields?
Yes, electromagnetic fields. That's right. Your cell phones, cell towers, and everything puts these off. And as I understand it, and I will not pretend to be very knowledgeable about all of this technology when it comes to the EMFs, I do know that it's well established that electromagnetic fields are damaging to the human biological system, or the human, what is it, the carbon-based form that we are? We are carbon-based forms.
That's
is that correct?
The new name for people. When we go to the global network and all of our medical records are online, and in order to assure somebody, if you want to access some information, that you are who you are, they have to distinguish between a carbon-based life form and a silicon life form, and they actually use the term silicon life form.
Did they call the silicone life forms too?
Yes, they're silicon life forms. So what that means in English is that difference, so they can tell the identity of a person versus a device.
Silicone is not life forms.
Well, I had to look this up. Silicon is different than silicone.
Oh, okay.
So silicon is a...
Still not a life form, is it?
Hey, would you like to know what a silicon is? It's a tetravalent non-metallic element that, after oxygen, is the most prevalent element in the Earth's crust. How'd you like that? I learned that
this morning. As in silicon chips.
Silicon, yes. It's the ingredient to make microchips.
So it sounds like we have two varieties of life forms here. Carbon-based, which is the ones we are most familiar with.
And silicon.
And silicon, okay, well, there you have it.
There you go. So
that would have to be smart devices, because all life is carbon-based. That's the difference between something that's living and an inanimate object like a rock.
Yes.
And so
you have to have an identity that's unique to you, and they're calling it identity proofing. And part of it, there's two kinds. You have to identify carbon-based life form and silicon-based life form. So we're kind of getting a little weird here, but that's really the kind of identification they're talking about when they have to identify who is wanting access to a file or data. They have to identify them as, there's two different identities out there. There's silicon-based identity, and then there's a carbon-based life form identity. All right, so... The FBI, we're going to talk about the carbon-based life forms here real briefly, we've addressed this before in our show, and I know Kay, you also, by the way, your show is called what?
It's Axiom for Liberty on Friday nights on ruleoflawradio.com. You can go to ruleoflawradio.com and pick that up every Friday night from 6 to 8, and I co-host with my good friend Howard Houchin.
All right, and Vicki, what is your website for our listeners?
It's www.channelingreality.com.
And we're not talking mediums here to channel reality. We're actually just talking about reading.
No, there's no magic in what I do. It's just all hard work.
It is. And OK Safe, I forgot to mention this at the beginning of the hour, is OK-Safe.com. That's OK-Safe.com. And we do have information there about the smart meters, about healthcare reform, U.S.-China, the China connection, and some other issues there, fusion centers, smart meter, as I already mentioned, and the rise of a technocratic society, whether they want to be called that or not. Speaking of technocracy and surveillance, the FBI is developing, here's an article headline, FBI to launch nationwide facial recognition service. And this is available on nextgov.com. And what is this exactly, Kay?
This is they're talking about next generation identification. And this is an FBI initiative, but it's combined with the DOE, not the DOE, but maybe the DOE, the DOD, Department of Defense, and also DHS. And this is, they're announcing that they're rolling out, that they are rolling out a nationwide facial recognition service, and this is to local law enforcement. So if they don't know who someone is, law enforcement doesn't know who someone is, they have a picture, but they don't know who it is, that they could link with the FBI and look through what has been described as the world's largest biometric database, Next Generation ID, that has face, palm prints, iris, and eventually will contain gait and possibly even scent, like human scent. They're building this database, and so now they're going to let law enforcement utilize it. And of course, one of the things people should know about this Next Generation ID database, this initiative, is that it has information not just from criminals, but they also use civil information. So in other words, people that have registered to take the bar exam, people that work with old people, you know, these sort of things. And they have obviously been working for years now to build this database. And one of my big concerns is that when they start this pilot sharing information with local law enforcement, which of course they are encouraging law enforcement to upload to the FBI's database, mugshots. We have this DMV database sitting there. And it's often been referred to as a honeypot because you have all of these biometrics in there with people that are clearly identified. The pictures are taken under optimal circumstances. And we don't want the FBI or the DOD or anyone trolling through those databases of innocent Americans.
But they are, and they're allowed to, because each of the states leading up to this, each of the states have created and instituted fusion centers. There's over, I think there's 72 or 73 fusion centers, and they're in Oklahoma. It's housed at the OSBI headquarters, but they are distributed. The technology is distributed throughout your state, these data gathering distribution points. And as you pointed out, the Department of Public Safety is a partner with the fusion centers and the motor vehicles database. When you go in to get your driver's license, you have to present documents to prove who you are. A birth certificate, and maybe some other document. And you have, in Oklahoma, you have a photograph that's taken, which is facial recognition quality, which means high resolution, and they take fingerprints. You're not a criminal, but you're treated as one in anticipation of a future crime. That stays in the DMV database. The fusion centers, of course, have access to it, and now the federal government has access to the fusion centers linking.
Well, so and also, too, in 2009, the FBI actually interfaced with North Carolina, as far as I know, are still interfaced with North Carolina on their honor that they're only using those databases, the DMV database, that is, in North Carolina, to find bad guys. But, excuse me, anybody that's been watching what's been going on over the years with the rearrangement and, excuse me.
That's all right.
With all of the changes that have taken place in law, policy, federal code, and all of that, you might assume that it's restricted to bad guys, but I wouldn't assume that. So there is already evidence that the FBI is interfacing. I have definitely a million PowerPoints here that show that they want that database, and that what they're doing with our driver's license photograph should be a concern for every American. We do not want them becoming the de facto law enforcement database. And the reason is because criminal justice information systems are just that. If all databases are used for so-called criminal justice or searching for terrorists, we are all effectively a suspect. And that is completely antithetical to our system of justice, which holds presumption of innocence as a cornerstone of that system.
It's works on the concept of prevention of crime. So in anticipation of a future crime, everyone's information is accessible by the Fusion Center. Vicki, you have a Fusion Center in Idaho, don't you? Maybe two?
Well, I think that's what they're building in Boise, Idaho. Only they called it the core, but I think underneath the surface of the core is a Fusion Center. But I just want to say everything that they're doing in the United States with this technology is antithetical to what is or was American. These systems, these surveillance systems, the community policing, which is part of the whole system.
To the intelligence-led policing.
It's all un-American. It's something that you would find, would expect to find in the Soviet Union or in communist China, but not in the United States.
I was reading a document that was issued by the Office of the National Coordinator. The Office of the National Coordinator is a position that was created in 2004 by under President George W. Bush. And the purpose of the Office of the National Coordinator was to devise and create, help institute in the states, in this country, the infrastructure necessary to share electronic medical information, healthcare information. And in that document, it acknowledged that there are laws on the books that will make it impossible for this new system based on technology to operate. And what they're commissioned to do is to make sure that to change any laws. Well, how they framed it was to say this, is that unfortunately, as we move into this technology-based infrastructure, is that there are on the books state statutes, regulations, and rules that will inadvertently and unnecessarily limit or prohibit or significantly limit the sharing of health information. So those laws, those state statutes, regulations, and rules have to be changed to allow the seamless flow of information. Well, it's the same rationale that's used for the fusion centers to do away with barriers to information sharing between the federal, state, local, tribal, and territorial levels. And by golly, as you mentioned, Vicki, it's un-American, and they're acknowledging it when they say those are antiquated laws. Well, those laws originally were based on a principle, not because a technology could do something. So what's actually driving our laws now are the technology companies. It's not
right.
Principle.
I wonder, you know, where did all these people come from that they don't understand the American way of doing things? And, you know, our freedoms, our privacy, you know, where did these people come from?
They came. That's a good question. They're all kinds. And I'm noticing a lot of them are coming out of the military. A lot of them have Colonel this and General that in front of their names. And I wonder, how'd you have time to learn all about technology? Some of them are coming from the multinational corporations, the IT companies. Some of them are coming from the communications companies. Some of them are coming from foreign interests, the Asian countries.
We're all utilitarians now. That's what we are, because the ends justify the means. And if they can do it, they think they ought to do it. And, you know, it's interesting you're talking about the laws. I was listening to a long and belabored conversation about this next generation ID. And they clearly say that the technology is not the problem. They have the technology to share and to make all of these databases interoperable. And we're talking about the Department of Defense. We're talking about the Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, and then by extension, local law enforcement databases as well. So the technology is not the problem. They've got the formats. They've got the technology to make all of those interoperable. It is the policies, the laws, and the politics that are preventing them. And interesting that you talk about the technology corporations driving this, because as I looked into this next generation initiative a little bit more, I found a recent article naming MorphoTrack and our friend Safran, that used to be L1 Identity Solutions.
They have the Oklahoma driver's license contract.
And BioKey. And one thing that I do know about those corporations, that they are exceedingly corrupt. I won't go into all of that right now. So we have got some of the most corrupt players in that industry on top of all of this.
I'll tell you why. It was back in the 1990s when Al Gore and Bill Clinton did their reinvention of government. Part of the reinvention process was conversion of defense industries. And the Department of Justice signed a memorandum of understanding with the DOD and to convert defense industry corporations towards domestic peace, quote, peaceful purpose. So you had defense contractors partnering up with law enforcement entities to develop technology for use in domestic circumstance.
So the battlefield is the states.
Yes, the United States is the battlefield. And in fact, all of the technology that has been developed was developed by people who were in the past designing systems for war.
That makes sense. So the FBI is using this technology that was developed for the Defense Department or for defense purposes to recognize an enemy, but it's going to be used on the American people. And because it's biometric, it has to do with some sort of measurement of our body features, whether it's your face, fingerprint, palm print, iris scan, or the gait, that means how you walk, which is by a certain pattern. And, you know, the part of me is like, all I want to do is walk from place A to place B. I'm not doing anything wrong, and I don't want to be watched or surveilled or identified. It's not that I'm doing anything wrong. I just would like to be left alone as I mind my own business. And that was understood and respected prior to the advance of these defense-type technologies, as they're called, advanced technologies. And just because they can see through a house doesn't mean they should be allowed to see through a house. And I was looking at all this stuff that's happening with these records and the sharing of records and the seamless flow of records, and I realized, you know what? A search warrant is going to be a thing of the past pretty soon. It's already becoming that way.
Yeah, it already is, because all of these databases, and I meant to say that the reason for the nationalized medical records, at least one of the reasons for it, is that they wanted it for the 911 enhanced system, which I believe turns out to be the fusion centers. So when you call 911, they'll be able to bring up all of the information about you, a full profile, your medical records, probably your financial records, everything about you.
All right.
Vicki, they're calling those emergency operation centers, and you're correct. The fusion centers will be a part of that.
All right. Mm-hmm. That's the music indicating the end of the very first half of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. I want you to stick around through the bottom of the hour, and we're going to dedicate this next song to the FBI from Frank Sinatra.
Do you need to promote your business on the internet? The Truth in Focus Radio Network reaches listeners locally in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and all across the United States. The shift is on from traditional media to internet marketing. Stay on the cutting edge with your business. Advertise with us today. Email radio at truthinfocus.org. You heard the word, so will they. Email us at radio at truthinfocus.org.
Kenyon State Wireless is your hands-on source for design, sales, service, and installation of the best LAN mobile two-way radio systems. Check us out on the web at kenyonstatewireless.com or call us for specific information at 866-458-4772, 866-458-4772. Kenyon State Wireless, when you're serious about communication.
I've got you under my skin. I've got you deep in the heart of me. So deep in my heart that you're really a part of me. I've got you under my skin. I've tried so not to give in. I've said to myself, this affair never will go so well. But why should I try to resist when, baby, I know so well? I've got you under my skin. I'd sacrifice anything, come what might, for the sake of having you near, in spite of a warning voice. Comes in the night and repeats how it yells in my ear. Don't you know, little fool, you can't possibly win. Why not use your mentality? Wake up to reality. But each time that I do, just the thought of you makes me stop just before I begin. 'Cause I've got you under my skin. Yes, I've got you under my skin.
And welcome back to the second half of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with nobody but Benjamin, and who is our producer. But my co-host is Kay Beach of Axiom for Liberty. And again, the name of your own radio show, Kay?
It's Axiom for Liberty, and we're on Friday nights from 6 to 8. You can go to axiomforliberty.com. That's Axiom with two X's, and get all the information there.
Kind of handy that your website and your radio program are called Axiom for Liberty.
I did something right for a change.
Okay, Safe's radio show is called America in the Balance, so you'd have to know two things. And our special guest is Vicki Davis, and I hear you there.
Yes, I'm here.
All right. And your website is channelingreality.com?
Uh-huh.
Okay, just checking. And our song, which is dedicated to the FBI, new surveillance system using biometrics, is Frank Sinatra's I've Got You Under My Skin, which is what they're trying to do, is make sure that the federal government knows every bit about of what's underneath your skin and on top of your skin and everything else about you. All right, let's talk about the Oklahoma Economic Development Summit and fascism and a little bit that you were talking about, Vicki, at the beginning of the show. The Oklahoma Economic Development Summit was entitled The New Oklahoma Economy. And again, you can go to the OEDC.net website and you can see all these presentations and see them for yourself. There's some audio and some video, and listen to those presentations. And what struck me when I was attending the 3-day or 2-day conference was the disconnect that a great many of these people, not everybody, but a great many of them had with the general public, in that a lot of them are supported through taxpayer-funded entities, like the Department of Commerce. And so they're not really engaged in trying to understand what it's like to live in an economy that's not subsidized in some manner or fashion. And what they're trying to do is decide, part of it is good and makes common sense, is like, what can we do to grow the economy in Oklahoma? Well, all the solutions had to do with what the speakers were saying, had to do with going global, which was foreign direct investment. That was the solution that was offered to these economic development councils, which were from all over the state. The other solution was to go social, to use social media. And I had a video clip from one of the people talking about how social media works. It's a data aggregating system technology, which we'll get into just a little bit. And it's sustainable, which it's taken me quite a few years to quite understand. Sustainable development has more to do with, it's not only to do with getting people off their property and into an urban setting and putting into these stack 'em and pack 'em development planned communities, walkable communities, get them out of their car. It also has to do with the whole economy is moving away from actually producing anything to just shifting data around through using technology. That's sustainable. And then strategic, the new economy is strategic in that there's going to be partnerships between an anchor company, the universities, and the government. And is that what you're seeing when you were looking through those presentations, Vicki? You were seeing that this strategic alliance between an anchor company, which will be a multinational corporation, a university, which they're calling academia, which is not just universities, it's the training schools and tech schools to produce the workers for this economy, and then the government, which is there to change the policies, create incentives, make sure the regulatory climate is conducive to this, and they issue permits. So you've written extensively about this particular triangle, this three-sided partnership, the strategic alliance, and you're calling them Trojan triangles. Did you see what you've been writing about in those Oklahoma Summit presentations?
Absolutely. Just right straight down the line. It's kind of amazes me that I nailed it like I did in the way of a triangle. But the way I saw it working is that the Trojan triangles are the centers for conversion of our economy to the Chinese fascist model. Now, in all of my research, whenever you see anything presented by people who are promoting this, like the economic development specialists and the business people who are the in partnership with the government, the language that they use is very mealy-mouthed. They don't really say exactly what it is. They make it sound attractive. So what I do when I talk about it is that I give you the straight, cold, hard word, the words, because everybody should understand what they are really doing, and it is pure fascism.
Explain fascism for the audience. Give the definition of that.
Fascism is the merger of government and corporate power. Mussolini called it corporatism because when you have the merger of corporate and government power, you have a government that transforms itself into being a for-profit government, which basically reduces people to slaves because you are working for, no matter what you do, you are working for the partnership.
You're working for the man.
Yeah. I mean, it's communism really is the collectivism. As you re-engineer the economy, they collectivize the assets. But the system is actually fascism. The merger of corporate and government power.
Vicki, I'm going to ask you to put your microphone just a little bit below your, near your chin, and I think, and away from your mouth.
Am I making pee noises?
Yeah, and I think we'll hear what you're saying just fine without that puff. Yeah.
That's okay.
I think
that's
better. Thank you. All right. And so what the conference had featured not only Governor Mary Fallon, who was the keynote speaker. She was a little bit late. She got there. She was one of the keynote speakers. She kind of gave a breathless presentation, then she had to run to another event. But what she was talking about was the new Oklahoma economy. We're going to have smaller, smarter government. We're going to create jobs and rah, rah, rah. And then she left. Then the people from the Department of Commerce spoke, Oklahoma Department of Commerce, who is put in charge of economic development and given quite a bit of leeway in this state to develop partnerships and to go out and seek foreign direct investment to bring them into the state of Oklahoma. The Department of Commerce presenters, one was Deidre Myers and the other one was Erica Lucas. Erica Lucas, was a young woman, did acknowledge that they are actively pursuing foreign direct investment, including from China, because that question was asked. And so when she was asked that question on foreign direct investment. Somebody, not everybody in the audience was sold on this idea of these foreign trade agreements or free trade agreements and NAFTA. That issue was brought up about globalization. She, in essence, said globalization is here. It's a reality. You're going to just have to deal with it. She was that cavalier about it, or slightly arrogant. I think she's led probably a privileged life, but she's kind of arrogant. It really doesn't matter. It's here. This is how we're going to deal with it. And so the solution was foreign direct investment. And so what she said in the answer to this question about all the jobs that have been lost through trade agreements like NAFTA and the jobs that have been lost to China, she responded, well, something else to add. This is a quote. When you look at the portfolio of jobs that have gone to China, Mexico, you have to really ask the question of whether we want those jobs back. Okay, we're talking advanced manufacturing. Advanced manufacturing means technology. What jobs? Look at the portfolio of jobs that have left, and more than likely, those were not high-paid jobs, especially those that went to China. Now, I'm not saying all of them were not, but, you know, I do hear a lot of, you know, workers' investments, a lot of the jobs are coming back from China, but are they the right type of jobs we're hunting for? In my opinion, they're not. Now, that's arrogant young woman who's saying, so what if you lost jobs to China? And so what if some of them are coming back? In my opinion, they're really not the worst. They're really not worth the jobs that we want back. Try telling that to all the people that lost their jobs, that were feeding their families with those jobs, were buying clothes, putting clothes on their kids, and providing shelter and sending their kids off to college with those jobs. And she has the arrogance to say that those are the jobs that we don't want back. And that there were low-paid jobs. Those were someone's livelihood. And it still gets me angry when I go back and even read her quote. I wanted to say something to her before she left, but she was gone. I'm old enough to be her mother, so I could have just said, you know, listen, Erica, it's a little arrogant. So
I think that's why I can't go to those kinds of conferences, because I don't think I could be nice.
Your blood pressure would go up. Well, she also answered the question, is the Department of Commerce actively pursuing foreign direct investment by China? And she answered, we're open for investments from any country. There's a lot of interest from the Chinese to bring investment in this country. We have a trade office in China for foreign direct investment. So the answer would be, yes, we are looking at it. It's just not our primary market. If Oklahoma has an office for foreign direct investment in China, your state has a foreign direct investment in China.
Oh, this is a cookie cutter plan. Everybody should understand that. The economic development, exactly as they are doing it in Oklahoma, they're doing it in Idaho, they're doing it in Illinois, they're doing it everywhere. It's cookie cutter.
Indiana,
There's nothing unique at all going on in Oklahoma that isn't going on everywhere else. And what drives me crazy is, don't people hear the fact that their state is going into business? They're going into business. One of the guys in one of the videos that I watched said that they had considered floating a $1 billion bond to finance the economic development, you know, small businesses. Well, you know, that's your state going into business. He also talked about selling off state assets.
That was Bob Sullivan, who was appointed by the governor to be in charge of a task force on commerce and economic development, jobs creation.
And was he the guy that was also talking about football?
I'm not sure. No, that was the lieutenant governor.
Oh, Vicki, okay. You gave me a really good definition. I always like to ask to define the terms, and we were talking about public-private partnerships, and you just touched on the municipal bonds. And the way you explained it to me was really clear when you were talking about our government's going into business. Well, so what does that mean? What does that mean? Explain to me what you explained about how the municipal bonds work for these core business areas.
Okay, well, the Trojan Triangles, I figured out that they are actually inland ports. And in Idaho law, they defined an intermodal commerce zone authority, which is actually another level of governing, but it's a hidden layer of government. It is above your city, above your county. It's like a regional metropolitan governing structure. Now, what they did, this governing structure, this inland port authority, they gave them the authority to issue bonds. They can issue tax-free bonds, which means that they go to the private sector to borrow money. And the people that loan money to the port authority it's interest-free. So when they loan money to this authority, the interest that they make on the loan is tax-free. Now, when you have, in this port authority, it's basically appointed commissioners that run it, and it's public-private partnership. So you have the very people who are going to loan money to your government to build infrastructure using this bonding system. They make money on it and don't have to pay taxes on it. They get to decide what gets built. They don't have to pay taxes on it.
Are these like the
hubs? Explain it to me
zones?
That it was.
Go ahead.
The privatization of profits. How did you say?
Oh yeah, yes, it is. It is the socialization of costs and the privatization of profits.
There you go.
So you have your governing entity assuming all of the costs for these high-dollar investors.
Which means you.
Yeah.
Taxpayers.
Right. The taxpayers assume all of the costs, and all of the profits are privatized.
And that's also pretty darn close to fascism, isn't it?
It's exactly fascism, and that's why I call it fascism, because
that's
what it is. And that's why I say that the ordinary people out there become essentially slaves, paying off the people who are profiting from it, the private profiteers, and they're paying not only with their reduced salary because this public private partnership thing is a monopoly. It's a monopoly on government and business activity, but they also pay for it through their taxes.
I'm going to give you an example. What you were just describing describes this one company called PL Studios that was one of the presenters. And it was a young guy, and his name was Pish Patel. And Pish Patel is born and raised in Oklahoma, but he looks like I would say he's an ethnic minority. Let's just put it that way. Smart guy. And he has a company called PL Studios, and he's the founder and the CEO. And he grew up in El Reno, Oklahoma, and he went to college, and he started PL Studios in 2001. And it's currently, he claims that his initial investment was $54, and now it has an annual revenue of $4.8 million, and it's growing. Well, while he was describing his company and how it got started, now he says $54, right? That's how it got started. And he paints this picture of how it worked as though it was all him. What he was an incubator company. That means that, and it's computer-based, he was able to have 39 computers running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in a facility for which he paid no rent, and he did not pay the utilities. He didn't have to pay the electric bill. It was provided to him through this incubator program. He had at his disposal a mentor and the availability of a lawyer to consult with. And again, this was no overhead cost to him, Plus, the facility is in a tax-free area where the taxes are deferred because it's in a zone, either a hub zone or an enterprise zone. But he was an incubator, a small business incubator, in this facility. And he that's how he claims he started it with $54. Well, he didn't start it with $54. It might have been $54 of his money initially, but it was all socialized. The rest of it was paid for by the state of Oklahoma through taxpayer subsidies. And I didn't get a chance to ask him, did you ever pay back the state for the boot, the lift up that you got to start your companies? And the guy that's out there trying to really start a business in his garage doesn't have that kind of support system, is the one that's really the real small business. These are the ones that are the chosen businesses. And because it was technology, they write little software programs for online, for tutorials, for four industries. Well, what he's also been able to do is, because it's technology, is create an application, a program that you can download onto your iPhone. And he produced this app with his team. And by the way, he only employs 9 people in Oklahoma. He has 25 people in total, but only 9 of them are in Oklahoma. And I think he's even got one, it says Midtown, Russia, and Ohio. So I don't know if Russia is a town in Ohio, but that's anyway. So it's not all in Oklahoma, yet Oklahoma gave him the support in order to start this business, and it only resulted in 9 employees. So he's talking about this app, and it's called Pigeon Me, and it's a tracking app, and he put it out there for free. And then he told the audience, well, how can I monetize a free app? I'm always asked that. Well, it's an invite. A little cartoon character of a pigeon with flying goggles on, and you invite your friend in, and then you can communicate with each other by, if you both have this app on your iPhone, and you can say, meet me at Starbucks at 4 o'clock, and on your phone, you can watch them travel to Starbucks at 4 o'clock. So you won't have to call them to say, are you on your way? You can see that they're on their way, okay? So it's using GPS and GIS technology, and it's a free app. Well, people invite their friends on, their friends invite people on into this, so now it creates a network. So he showed a map of the United States, heavy sign up in Oklahoma, and then pretty soon it spread throughout the United States where people were inviting on. So he didn't have to pay them to advertise his product or to market it, because the public was advertising it and marketing it for him, right? So there's no overhead with this. And he's only out the time it took to develop the app. When it reached 100,000 people, he said, that's when we began scraping the data, accumulating the data, aggregating the data, packaging it, and then they sell it. And as the app grows, the connectors, the people who pick it up, it grows and grows, and more data is scraped, packaged, and sold. Do the people that downloaded the free app get a royalty check? No, they don't. They're working for PL Studios, but they think they're getting a free app, and yet they are producing something that's going to get him hundreds of thousands, if not $1 million. And all they're doing is downloading a free app. That's what the social media aspect of this is for. They're data aggregators, and somebody's going to make money on the data that is acquired by you connecting from one entity to another. And I thought that was pretty interesting, but that's how this is working. They don't produce anything.
Is this the knowledge? What is this? The knowledge economy that information?
Knowledge-based economy.
It's currency.
Data is the currency, and all it is. It's all based on data, moving data from point A to point B. Somebody gathers it, analyzes it, and sells it. That's it.
But I'd like to point out that Oklahomans are paying real dollars for that, and a small business incubator system that runs out of the university, there you'll see in your State Department of Commerce that there are consultants that also work with the university system. I think in Idaho it's called Tech Connect, and they connect them up with venture capitalists and small business loans. The Small Business Administration will give an 85% guarantee on loans to these small businesses. There is a service that's funded by Congress that will teach people how to contract with the government, how to apply for contracts, and how to do contracting with the government. And if they are located within a zone, they get preferences for contracting with government. So it's a whole parasitic economy that is set up that is virtually unknown to the general public out there that, you know, is working at real jobs, earning real money, or trying to. And they're paying for it without even understanding what it is.
If you go to the Oklahoma Department of Commerce website and click on the link that says Start a Business Home, Start a Business, there's where you get all the help, and that's where they plug you into these businesses and put you in a hub zone or encourage you to be in a hub zone. Probably most of the state is already part of a hub zone, I think. If you go to the OK Safe website, there's a link on hub zones, and there's a map of the whole Oklahoma, and it'll tell you which hub zone you're in. I think most people are in a hub zone and qualify for these tax incentives or these tax breaks, which means everybody's paying for it.
Right.
And the government picks the winners and the losers.
Based.
Well, the government picks the winners and the losers, but you'll appreciate this one PowerPoint slide. Glad you mentioned that, Kay. Slide 37 of one of the presenters, this was Greg Maines, who is the president of St. Gregory's University, and he's kind of he's an older gentleman that is somewhat arrogant, but he made this, his one of his slides. Now, we're talking about strategic alliances, which are public-private partnerships, as Vicki described it, and certain companies will have favorite position, and others will just have to flounder, and the arguments that have been out there for a long time is that government's role is not to pick winners and losers. Well, he has a slide on there, and the quote is, government shouldn't pick winners and losers, unquote, is a hollow soundbite coming from the shallow end of the pool. So if you're not one of those big anchor multinational corporations, you are...
And you little dummies.
From the shallow end of the pool. Now, that's the kind of arrogance... attitude that was prevalent
that's
in the speakers.
That's what little dummies say.
Wasn't he a university professor?
He was the president of St. Gregory's University.
Okay, well, he's been on the dole in a pampered and sheltered life his whole career. So he has no idea of what the pool is like at all.
Well, no, he's probably a grant baby.
He's been in his own pool.
He's been
or fishbowl.
Well, he's in the deep end of the pool. That's what he's saying, is that he's in the deep end of the pool. We've only got 2 minutes left on this program. Is there anything each one of you would like to add? We kind of had a smorgasbord of topics today, from smart meters to FBI surveillance systems to OEDC, the new economy and technology. Do you have any parting comments, Vicki? And then we'll get to Kay.
Yes, I would say it's absolutely imperative for people to understand what has been done with our economy, and because we need to undo it. We need to unravel it, because it is not American. It's un-American.
And we're going to sink, and I couldn't agree with you more. And Kay, do you have any parting comments?
Well, it was a pleasure to be with you again, as always. And the simplest thing I can say that I say over and over again is just know your rights, ask questions, demand answers. Just those three simple things can bring about more change in what's going on with our government than I could convey.
Those are both good comments. And I would add another one, is that we do need to repent as a country, repent as a people. It starts with us as individuals to turn back from whatever it is that we've been engaged in, and really exercise our civic responsibility, hold our elected officials accountable, and that means after they're elected, and never, ever believe a press release. There we are. We're going to go out with Frank Sinatra again and again. The song is dedicated to the FBI, who wants to get under your skin. Thank you both for listening, and thank you both for being my guest today, and may God bless you. Bye-bye.
I've got you. deep in the heart of me. So deep in my heart that you're really a part of me. I've got you.